It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR. And I'm delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 329, and today we are talking about books being released on September 21st, 2021, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Tirza Price, and we're coming to you from bookriot.com. Tirza, hello!
Hello, Liberty!
How's it going?
Oh, it's going really well, thanks. You know, it's starting to feel a little bit cool, a little bit like fall here, and I'm very excited about it. Also, this is the first time that I'm recording with you from my new house in Iowa, so that's kind of fun. Right.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I've got a completely new setup, so hopefully I sound all right, not too echoey.
No, you sound great.
Perfect.
I was just asking you if you could hear me because it's raining here and the cars going by. I live on the busiest road on the eastern seaboard and the cars going by are so loud because wheels on water on pavement equals loud.
Well, my new town has train tracks that go through it. And I've never lived in a town that's been like super close to trains before. So I'm getting used to the fact that like randomly trains will just go by, and it really depends, I guess, on whoever's driving the train, whether or not they do like a couple like, hey, honk, honk, we're coming through, or if they like just lay on the whistle. So yeah, it's fun. And I have not quite figured out like what their schedule is. Apparently, like to me, it feels like random, like, oh, there goes a train. But so I'm sure that if we record long enough and often enough, we will one day hear a train in the background because my house is only like two blocks away from the tracks and it's very loud.
Oh yeah. I don't, you know, now that you say it, we have train tracks and the trains go by, but it's always like in the middle of the night. I think that they're just there to like move things for construction, and you know, there's a naval base nearby and they take stuff there, and but like it's always like pretty low key, just like some low whistles at night. You hear them a lot, but it's not nearly as loud as like the people driving by with their radios blaring in the middle of the night, which is totally me, by the way. I am that person. I'm very sorry, but like when I'm in my car driving, like that is my loud time. Like I have to go somewhere tomorrow that's several hours away, and someone else was like, hey, do you want to drive with me? And I was like, no. No, I don't, because I want my loud time so that I can play my music so loud that I can't hear anything else and just scream. It's going to be great. Very excited for that.
It sounds very therapeutic.
It really is, because as I've mentioned a few times, you know, I cannot listen to music while I'm reading, which is 90% of what I do. So every once in a while, I'm like, I need to listen to music. Like, I have very visceral reactions. I woke up the other morning and my very first thought was, if I don't listen to the Violent Femmes right now, I'm going to die. Like, I'm pretty certain I'm going to die right now. So I got out of bed and I put on the Violent Femmes and I was like, oh, it's so much better.
Well, I'm glad you did die.
Because I love music, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do people listen to music, especially with words? Like, can you listen to music with words while you're reading?
Yes. And in fact, when I was a kid, it was like my favorite thing to do was I had a little portable radio and I lived like way out in the country. So I would always listen to like the radio to like the top, like either the country hits or the pop hits, like on a Friday night. I'd listen to that while I was reading my books. That was like my ideal Friday night because I was a nerd and I didn't have many friends way out in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, I could do that. I don't really do it now, though. The only time that I might be listening to music while reading is if my partner's listening to something and we kind of happen to be in the same vicinity, then like I can still read while the music's playing in the background. And I write with music playing in the background. Sometimes I need the music.
With words?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was listening to Fleetwood Mac today while I was writing.
Oh, that is good stuff. But I would be completely distracted. It just, I don't know what it is.
I cannot read, though, if the TV is on. And it doesn't matter if I can't see the TV. If I can hear the TV, I can't do it. Yeah. So, like, that is the one thing I can't do is TV and read. Not that I try to watch TV and read at the same time, but, like, if somebody else is watching the TV, I can't be reading.
Yeah.
I have to, like, go to another room.
Oh, yeah. I have that same problem, like, when my husband watches TV. I have to, like, close the door to my office. I wonder if it's just, like, my problem with attention. I don't know. I can't. Especially, like, I've tried music without words, and it still doesn't really work for me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Well, it's like, yeah, your brain's getting pulled in two different directions. It's hard to focus.
Yeah. In my brain, I mean, my brain is smooth like an egg, so I already have enough problems with it. We are going to talk about books now after we hear from our first sponsor.
It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR. And I'm delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
And Tirza, you are going to kick things off today for a change.
All right. Well, I feel like I have to, like, give a little preemptive warning to, like, everybody and just say that, like, all my picks kind of reflect that it's turning towards spooky season. And even, like, my lighter pick is still kind of about death. So, yay, here we go. So my first pick is All These Bodies by Kendar Blake, which is a young adult standalone book. It is kind of eerie, kind of creepy. It is obviously taking a lot of inspiration from Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, which is a book that utterly fascinated me the first time I read it and still kind of fascinates me just because of everything that's going on in that book, like the true crime, but like also Truman Capote kind of like pioneering this, you know, creative nonfiction genre. I think it's all very fascinating. So I picked up this book knowing that it was in part inspired by In Cold Blood, and I was not disappointed, although it's not really like a true In Cold Blood read-alike, if that's what you're expecting. So All These Bodies is about a teenage boy named Michael. He is the son of the sheriff in a small town in Minnesota. It's like 1957 or something, sometime in the 1950s. And there has been like this series of murders that like started in Kansas, swept across Iowa into Wisconsin and Minnesota. And basically what happens is like these bodies are discovered completely without blood. So of course the media is like, it's a vampire, the bloodless murders. And it gets a lot of attention because it insinuates that there's a serial killer on the loose. And so the story really starts when this serial killer strikes the small town that Michael is living in. And basically a family is killed. And instead of like the killer vanishing without a trace, as the killer has done in all the previous murders, one person is left behind. And it's a teenage girl named Marie. And she's just covered in blood. But, like, there's no blood anywhere else in the room, on the bodies, in the bodies. Like, it's a really weird case where people are like, what the heck is happening? So this young woman, Marie, gets taken into custody and she's booked at, you know, the local jail, which Michael's father runs as the sheriff. Like, it's a very small operation. There's only two sheriff deputies. And immediately, like, the media and prosecutors from other states are like, we want this girl. We want to prosecute her. She must be responsible for these murders, but she won't admit to them. And she kind of insinuates that there's, like, another person who's involved. And so everybody wants her to give up her accomplice because they figure it must be a man. It must be an older man. And he must be the one in charge of the killings. And she's just kind of being dragged along. And that's really what everybody thinks. And so they're not quite willing to hand her over to like the FBI or to other states yet. But Marie will not tell anybody anything. And she actually says, you know what? I'm not going to confess or tell anyone anything. The only person I will talk to is Michael, our protagonist, who is this aspiring journalist and son of the sheriff. So he's like, what, me? Okay. And he's curious and he wants to know. And he thinks like maybe this will make a good story. He can get into journalism school. But of course, the story that Marie tells sort of defies logic and doesn't always make a lot of sense. And he knows that like, surely this can't be the truth. But what if it is the truth? So I really liked that Blake creates like this very creepy atmospheric vibe. This is definitely one of those books where like the mystery kind of makes you go WTF and like, where is it going? And I kind of like that. I kind of liked the whole like, is this a supernatural thing? Is it not? Is this person, you know, suffering from like some kind of mental illness? What is going on here? And I would say that all of that is, you know, handled very respectfully, but it does leave you wondering. So that is All These Bodies by Kendar Blake.
I got really excited for a second when you first mentioned the girl. I was like, oh, please let this be an Anna Dressed in Blood crossover. Because I love that book.
I have not read it.
Is that Blake's first book, maybe?
I believe it was the debut. Yeah. But I haven't read it. So, yeah, but I think if you like Anna Dressed in Blood, you will probably enjoy this book, given what I know of the book.
Yeah. So. Oh, it's at the top of my list. I'm very excited. You know, and also, like, In Cold Blood was, like, the scariest book that I had ever read.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, I was 8 when I first read it, but...
That was so young, Liberty. Oh, my gosh.
I know. I read so many age-inappropriate books when I was 8 at camp when we... I was talking about them in my cannibalism post this week. I wrote that post about the best horror books featuring cannibalism. And I was like, I read Alive and In Cold Blood and Helter Skelter and just like explained so much like when I was little. But I am looking forward to reading that one. My first pick today is a book that I have been so excited for everyone to read. It is The Body Scout by Lincoln Michelle. And there's so much going on in this book, I'm not even entirely sure where I should start with it, but it's just so awesome. It's set in the future, and all these like futuristic things are going on. People talk to holograms instead of phones. There's like all the animals on the earth that have ever existed, they have been able to bring them back, and now they use them as a source of meat.
Huh.
The early man, the Neanderthals, have been cloned and are part of the population again. And people can get replacement parts for their bodies if something goes bad or something goes wrong. If they can afford it, they're very expensive. So now some people have the ability to live forever because you're like, oh, that's broken. I'll just replace it. So the protagonist of this story is Kobo. Kobo was once a star for a cyber baseball team. He has some cyber parts. And in the past, several years before the events of this book, they had a cyber athlete, like they were allowed to play baseball. But then they were banned from sports because they're like, that's cheating. They have, you know, robot parts. And so they started banning cyber athletes. So now Kobo works as a scout for the baseball teams. All of the professional baseball teams are now owned by Big Pharma. They're all named after like giant pharmaceutical companies because that is probably the most realistic part of the book because that's where we're headed. So now he works as a scout. But the other thing is that his brother, JJ Zunes, is a big-time baseball star. He is a present-day baseball star. He's playing for the Monsanto Mets, and at the beginning of the book, he dies on the field. Like, that's not a spoiler. That's what this is about. And so was it these performance-enhancing drugs that he was being given? Because while cyber parts are not allowed any longer, performance-enhancing drugs and gene manipulation are totally, well, I wouldn't say above board, but it just happens. Like, everybody's doing it. So Kobo wants to get to the bottom of his brother's death, starting with finding this young girl that he was seen with before he died. And Kobo also needs to figure out how to get the loan sharks off his back, because even though he's not allowed to play baseball anymore, he still owes a ton of money for these parts that he got so that he could play baseball when cyber athletes were allowed. And so, with the help of his awesome friend, He is going to search for the answers. What happened to his brother? Who is this young woman? It's so much fun. I just loved it from start to finish. It is a wild, inventive sci-fi thriller slash mystery. It has a lot of heart and a lot of humor, and it addresses a lot of philosophical questions, including things about cloning and body modification. Like, for instance, the early man, the Neanderthals, they have been cloned for forced labor purposes. And mm-hmm. then there's the whole thing with the animals who are brought back just to be used for food sources. And so that people can say, like, hey, I ate a woolly mammoth. Like, wow, you know. It's so interesting. It's like if Mickey Spillane wrote Blade Runner. I'm a huge fan of down on their luck, wisecracking private investigators. I mean, he's not really a private investigator, but, you know, this is what he's doing in this book. And, you know, he's makes a lot of mistakes, but he's trying to do what's right. I also loved the loan shark heavies who are after him. Brenda and Wanda, who are these half-robot twins who are on his case all the time. It's so much fun. And I hope that he writes more in this world. I mean, it's definitely a standalone, but I would be super excited if we got to see more in this world. I do want to give content warnings for violence, murder, body modification and body horror, gore, trauma, and chemical use and abuse, and also a lot of inferred animal death because of all the meat eating. So that is The Body Scout by Lincoln Michel.
That sounds so bonkers. I'm always impressed with writers who have, like, amazing premises, and that sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
All right, my second pick is When Things Get Dark, which is a short story collection edited by Ellen Datlow, and this is a collection of short stories where, like, the whole, like, sort of theme and central focus is basically, like, stories inspired by Shirley Jackson, whom I love, so naturally I was always going to read this book, and it just so happens that I could read it for my episode here. So this is a short story collection with so many amazing different authors. I mean, you've got Carmen Maria Machado, you have Josh Malerman, Seanan McGuire, Stephen Graham Jones, and Kelly Link, who is one of my favorite short story writers of all time. I think just one of my favorite writers of all time. So they are all contributors to this anthology. And there's a bunch of other people, too. Some people, like, I'm going to admit, I did not know who they were until this anthology. So they were new to me. But what I really like about this, like, this collection is that, like, it's, there's so much that you can, there's so many different directions you can go with if you're, like, just write a short story that's inspired by Shirley Jackson, in part because Shirley Jackson was very, she had such a good wide range. Like, I don't know if you've never read anything by Shirley Jackson. I think a lot of people, they immediately go to, like, The Haunting of Hill House or The Lottery, which is a short story that a lot of people have to read in school. And it's, you know, arguably her most famous short story. But if you kind of dig deeper into her entire works, like, she wrote everything from, like, really funny domestic sort of comedies that she sold to women's magazines about her family life to, like, the darker stuff, too. And I think that it's just two very interesting sides of her. And so this anthology being inspired by her, I think, sort of marries those two sides in a really interesting way. So some of my favorite short stories in this, Elizabeth Hand wrote a short story called For Sale by Owner, which is about a haunted house, but, like, not what you would expect. I think if you really like The Lottery, Josh Malerman's short story, Special Meal, really taps into that sort of, like, what the heck is going on? Society looks similar, but it's structured very differently in the short story. And there's very high stakes, but you don't quite understand what those are until you really get into it. I inhaled that short story. Kelly Link's, which is the last story in this entire anthology, really, I think it's, like, the longest one, too. It was really incredible. It's called Skinder's Veil. And I don't even know what to say about that story because it's just so super fascinating. And I think it, like, captures, like, the mundane and the fantastical and how they can, you know, basically sometimes be, like, two sides of the same coin, just really, really brilliantly. So I love this anthology. Obviously, not every short story in this anthology is going to be like a favorite. There were a couple stories that I will confess that I kind of skimmed through. And there was one short story that, while not outrightly transphobic, had a comment that I wasn't sure how to interpret, and it made me a little bit uncomfortable. So, you know, that, and I can tell you that that short story is Tiptoe. So if that's something that you just want to skip over, please feel free to do so. But the short stories in here that I liked, I really liked, and I know that some of them are so creepy, they're going to stay with me for a really long time. I know that, like, anthology sort of TV shows are really popular right now, and I could totally imagine this anthology or certain stories from this anthology being adapted into, like, a really creepy, like, anthology horror show with, like, 1 hour episodes where you're just like, what the heck? And these stories could come to life in a really exciting way. So that is When Things Get Dark, edited by Ellen Datlow.
All right. I want to say two things. One, I love Shirley Jackson. And if you want to read an amazing Shirley Jackson story, it's one of my favorite ones. It was part of the Lottery and Other Stories collection that came out in 1949. I think it was originally published in Mademoiselle. And this is a really funny domestic story called Charles, which
yes,
it's probably my favorite Shirley Jackson. I don't know if it still is. It's been a while since I've read any of her short stories, but if you just Google Charles, you can, like, find it available online, no problem. And also, I do want to point out that the Shirley Jackson, this collection doesn't come out until the 28th, so we are teasing people.
Oh, a week in shoot. Advance. I must have gotten my days wrong. I'm sorry about that, guys.
That's okay. I didn't even notice until I was, like, looking at my stack of September 21 books that, you know, because I organize them by date, and I'm like, why is it, I have that book, but why is it sitting in that stack? And I looked it up, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's good to know.
Things are getting shifted around again, too, because of the supply chain issues.
So much.
Yeah.
So sorry. Much. It's almost impossible to keep track of it now. It's just like, ugh, whatever. I can't, you know, every day I'm, like, changing things in our calendar and changing things in the document. Just like, okay, I'm trying to stay on top of things, but
yeah,
she was. It's wild.
Well, luckily you only have to wait a week, so go put your pre-order in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, call your local indie, get ready to read it. Read Charles while you wait. It's so good. I love that. So my next pick today is a fabulous novel called The Book of Form and Emptiness by Ruth Ozeki. You might recognize Ruth Ozeki's name. She wrote My Year of Meats and A Tale for the Time Being. Those are probably her two most popular novels, the latter of which I loved. The Year of Meats I did not read because I generally avoid things that have, like, meat in the title. But I've heard it's also excellent. And this is a very sweet, sad novel about love and loss and the physical things in our lives, which I will explain a little bit more in a second. It's the story of Benny O. Benny is 13 years old when his gregarious clarinet-playing father dies in an accident. And he's left alone with his mother, Annabelle, who was a librarian who put aside her career when she got pregnant and married his father, and she's been raising him. And now their father didn't make a lot of money as a set musician, but, you know, now he's gone and they don't know what they're going to do. They both feel very lost without him and they both sink into grief. And also, on the day of his father's funeral, Benny hears his father calling his name. Like, he's quite certain that his father is calling his name and he doesn't understand why that is happening. But then hearing things talk to him starts happening more and more often. He hears a sneaker talking, he hears a broken Christmas ornament, a piece of lettuce is talking to him, and sometimes they sound like his dad and sometimes he doesn't know the voices. And it scares him because things are speaking to him. And even though sometimes they're nice, sometimes they're not nice, they're a little belligerent, and sometimes their voices are louder than others, and it kind of freaks him out. Understandably, and he begins to worry about what it means, you know, that he's hearing objects speaking to him. But it also gets harder for him because at the same time, his mother starts hoarding. So their house fills up with more and more objects. So he's having a harder time dealing with this. And he's also having a harder time in general, like at school and with the kids. His father was Japanese, his mother is American. And more often now that his father isn't around, because he doesn't look like his mother. The kids ask him if that's his real mom. They ask her if she's his real mom, and it's upsetting to them. And the kids really liked his dad. They used to come over and play at his house, and now, like, they don't come over as much, so he's kind of lonely. So he's, like, hearing voices, and he's having a hard time at home. So he decides to go to a place that he knows will be quiet, the library. And at the library, he meets several interesting people with fascinating lives, including a poet and a performance artist. And he really feels like he's found his place. Like, he feels like he has a place among them. And he also meets his book. This book. The book that you are reading as the reader. The book that you are reading is the narrator of this story. The book is telling the story of Benny, and it's got beautiful things to say about books and their place in our lives. And, you know, it also tells the story of Annabelle and her romance between her and Benny's father and her life before she met Benny's father. There are speculative elements besides the voices, including some magnetic poetry on the fridge that plays an important part. And the book is about how what we have can tell our stories, how what we leave behind tells our stories, but also how we are not just the sum of our things, and how time and life affect not just our bodies and our minds, but the things around us. And book is not just the only narrator of this book. Benny also jumps in every once in a while and talks to book, being like, don't forget to talk about this, and you're telling this part wrong, or, you know, you're getting ahead of yourself. And they have, like, this cute little back and forth. It's a really sweet, surreal story of grief and impermanence. I do want to give content warnings for mentions of chemical use and abuse, racism, ableism, mental illness, body shaming, sexual assault by a family member, loss of a loved one, bodily harm, and death. This is The Book of Form and Emptiness by Ruth Ozeki.
Awesome. I have also read some Ruth Ozeki, but I have not read that one yet, so that sounds amazing. Okay, my next pick is a book that is probably highly anticipated by a lot of people. It is Under the Whispering Door by T.J. Clune, and T.J. Clune is the author of The House in the Cerulean Sea, which I felt like took the world by storm last year, which is in part because it's a really great book, but also I feel like it was so comforting and we all needed that during the pandemic. And I think you actually talked about that book, Liberty, when I was on an episode with you, and I was like, oh man, I gotta go
get that book.
Yes. It's so good. So I also feel like it's such an interesting and unique book that, like, people were like, well, what do I read after The House in the Cerulean Sea? And it's like, there was no easy sort of like, okay, now you need to read this, or this book is like that book. So Under the Whispering Door, I think, does kind of get like those same kind of vibes as The House in the Cerulean Sea, but different still too. So it is about a man named Wallace Price, who is this like very successful, very hoity-toity lawyer, and all he does is work all the time, and he doesn't really believe in like being kind, or I don't know, having a work-life balance. He's like, no, there is work and you are efficient and that is enough. And so it is unsurprising when at the very beginning of the book, Wallace dies of a heart attack at age 40. And he kind of comes back and he's like at his funeral and he's like, what the heck is going on? And so that is when he meets a young woman named May, who is like the only one that can see him because he's a ghost. And May is a reaper who takes him far away from the city to this tea shop in the mountains, in the woods. And the tea shop is owned by a man named Hugo. And Hugo is just, you know, this person that exists to help people, you know, guide them to whatever is next. And he is kind of like, what the heck? No, I do not need help getting, you know, crossing over. Like, I just want to go back to my life. And Hugo kind of has to convince him that, like, no, you're pretty much dead. And so you've got to, you know, basically figure it out. Like, you've got to cross over at some point. And so this becomes just, you know, a very difficult thing for Wallace to wrap his head around. But slowly he realizes that, like, yeah, this is real and there was a lot that I missed out on in life. And if I can't stay here forever, then I've got to figure out, like, what is it that I missed out on and how can I kind of, like, cram in basically, like, the best parts of living in just a short period of time. So if you've read The House in the Cerulean Sea, just, like, be prepared for all the feels. Like, you know what I'm talking about. This book is probably, I would say it's a little quieter than The House in the Cerulean Sea, but, like, it's full of, you know, just these very powerful and yet sort of mundane conversations about, like, what it means to be alive and how do we deal with, like, the people and the things that have hurt us and how do we, you know, sort of find meaning in all of this. It's also got, like, a really adorable ghost dog. It has a tea shop with scones that sounds delightful. Like, I would love to go there. It's also, you know, a queer love story, which I'm all for those, especially, you know, just finding really great ones with great representation. I think that that's awesome. I did not cry reading The House in the Cerulean Sea, but definitely felt the waterworks starting with this book. So, you know, content warning for a discussion of death. Like, there's nothing that's super graphic or violent or anything, but, you know, circumstances of dying and death, and including, you know, just mentions of suicide do exist in this book. So just a heads up for that. But that is Under the Whispering Door by TJ Klune. Another great one from him.
For some reason, I keep getting this cover confused with The House on Chicken Legs by Sophie Anderson. I find them to be kind of similar. So when I keep thinking of the cover of this book, like, I imagine it looks like Baba Yaga's house with chicken legs, and I keep being wrong, but that's the image that I have in my head.
But it has those vibes for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So before I talk about my last pick for today, we are going to hear from another sponsor. And my last pick is a nonfiction book called The Sleeping Beauties and Other Stories of Mystery Illness by Suzanne O'Sullivan. O'Sullivan is an Irish neuroscientist living in Britain. And if you don't know what a neuroscientist is, I did a quick Google search at the top of Wikipedia. It says, neuroscientists focus primarily on the study and research of the nervous system. The nervous system is composed of the brain, spinal cord, and nerve cells. So that is what she works on. And basically, O'Sullivan was intrigued by what are called mysterious illnesses, a harmful label that is usually perpetuated by the media. And they are cases in which there is no obvious something affecting a person, or we're not, or there is something obviously affecting a person, that's what I meant to say, but there is no physical explanation for what it is. She says, you know, in the past, it would have been called, like, hysteria or psychosomatic. And now they refer to these kinds of things as functional neurological disorders. And they are often caused by trauma. And there is a harmful stigma around them that if you can't figure out what it is or you can't see what it is, people are faking it because there is no immediate explanation. And she's really interested in these cases of things like she reads in the paper. And she visits all these places around the world where, like, this pocket of this happened here and this happened in another place, which I'll explain a little more. But she traveled around the world looking at these cases of FNDs. They're often specific to one location and even more specific to a certain age group and a nationality. So, for instance, the first case that she visits, there are these children in Sweden, hundreds of children who sort of just fell into a deep sleep. Sometimes for days, sometimes for months, some of them are still in this deep sleep. But there's no signs of a coma. There's no illnesses. They've been tested, you know, had spinal taps or blood work. Their bodies, like all the tests, like the readouts show that they are, their body is awake. Like it's saying like, well, this is a healthy body that's awake. Yet for some reason, these children are unresponsive. They're the sleeping beauties. And it turns out that in Sweden, the children who were affected by this, it's just happening in Sweden, are the children of asylum seekers. And they have been through these traumatic experiences in their own country, and their families sought asylum in Sweden. And for some reason, it only was affecting children who came from the Baltic regions, which she found completely fascinating. And she went there and she visited them. And it's these families whose status is on the line. There's a lot of trauma from what happened when they were there. There's a lot of stress about having to go back, like they most likely will have to go back. And she also made this correlation between these children and the fact that they are most likely the ones who read the letters from the Swedish immigration government saying, like, you're going to have to go back because their parents don't speak Swedish and the kids pick it up faster. And it's just, it's amazing. This, like, it's just fascinating. And there is no outward explanation. So she is there to look at these children because if she can find a brain reason for why this is happening, you know, it's easier to get them help and also to help them stay, or, you know, like providing an explanation makes it easier for people to take care of them and understand what's going on. And she talks about how, you know, the brain has so many systems in place to teach us things, you know, like everything that we know, from tying our shoes to, you know, reading to storing material, like learning things, you know, so why wouldn't the brain also have systems in place to dismantle that? So, you know, because like the brain, there's so much they don't know about the brain still, which is so fascinating to me. I've said fascinating like 800 times now. But I do, like, it's something that we have in our head. We have all this technology, and yet we know so little about the brain still. It's just banana pants to me. And so O'Sullivan goes around the world visiting places. Like, there was a town in upstate New York where a bunch of teenage girls were all suddenly struck with this affliction. She goes to Kazakhstan. She goes to the Mosquito Coast of Nicaragua. She goes to Colombia. She goes and investigates this case at the U.S. Embassy in Cuba. And if you like medical mysteries, or you like reading about science or the brain, or just really good nonfiction, I found this to be so compelling and just amazing. I do want to give content warnings for mentions of mental illness and physical illness, trauma, violence, and death. That is called The Sleeping Beauties and Other Stories of Mystery Illness by Suzanne O'Sullivan.
I think you have just helped me figure out what I'm getting my mother for her birthday. So thank you.
Yeah, it's just wild. I know that I've mentioned this before on the show, but like the brain freaks me out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, how does it, where's all the information that it knows? Like, where, like, you can't see it. How is it storing it? Freaks me out.
Yeah. No, it does. It's one of those things where like the more you think about it, the more you're like, whoa, what? Wow.
That's true. And, yeah. You know, I only learned like a few years ago, and of course this makes total sense, but it didn't, I never thought about it. It's like your brain doesn't feel any pain, you know, like there's no pain receptors in your brain.
Yeah.
So like they can poke and prod at it all they want and you don't actually, like, it doesn't hurt you, which is
okay.
Weird.
Never thought of that. So thank you for that.
Yay.
Oh, yay.
What's your last pick?
My last pick is Beasts and Beauty by Saman Chinnani, who you might have heard of if you are aware of children's fiction at all, because he is the author of the School for Good and Evil series, which is a middle grade fantasy series. And I think it's like going to be a Netflix movie relatively soon.
Yes, it is.
Yes, super popular. So this is a book that is, I mean, I think it's technically kind of geared towards like upper middle school, young adults. But like, if you like fairy tales and you like fairy tales retold, this is definitely great for all ages. They sometimes get maybe like a little bit dark, but like not like Angela Carter dark, because it's still appropriate for children. But like they can get a little dark. So what's really cool about this collection is that he basically retells 12 fairy tales, and they are all fairy tales that we probably know very well. We have, you know, Cinderella, you have Rapunzel, Hansel and Gretel, Jack and the Beanstalk, and they are all told in this sort of fantasy fairy tale sort of dreamy kind of voice, so they still do feel kind of like a bedtime story, but there's a bit more detail to it and a bit more bite. They are very feminist, very much about kind of seeing that the people who do wrong get their just desserts, if that makes any sense. I really enjoyed this collection. I had not read anything by this author beforehand, even though I know that School for Good and Evil series is very popular. I used to hand it to kids all the time when I worked in libraries. And I'm really intrigued by his writing now because I enjoyed this collection so much. I think that his retelling of Hansel and Gretel was really great. It was an Indian-inspired retelling where the witch is not who you think she is. I thought that the Jack and the Beanstalk story was a really great retelling as well, because it is about parents who aren't very parental and what happens to them. I also have to say that this collection, I mentioned that it was feminist, it's diverse, it is, LGBTQ inclusive. So that was really fun to see. And I think that this is going to be, a really popular book with a lot of readers of all ages, because these stories were just super clever. So that is Beasts and Beauty by Suman Chinnani.
Okay, so before we talk about what we're going to read next, I just wanted to take a minute. The National Book Award long lists came out this week, as did the Booker Prize shortlist, and I was thinking that I hadn't read a lot of the books on the NBA long list, but I realize now, I have read 8 of the 10 for fiction. Although I have read, not many of the nonfiction. I haven't read any of the poetry. I've read, 2 of the translated, and I think I've read, 2 of the YA. So I was just wondering if you had any favorites, because you are the YA expert. I was wondering if you had any favorites in that, and, maybe a book that you would have wanted to see on that list.
I super love that Last Night at the Telegraph Club by Melinda mm-hmm. Lowe is on the Young Readers list, because I love that book. And I know that I talked about that book on the show in January, I'm pretty sure. Or maybe I did. Yeah, I was everything's just kind of a blur right now. I also read The Legend of Auntie Poe a couple weeks ago, and I really enjoyed that. And I'm super excited to see Revolution in Our Time, which will be out next week by Keckle Magoon. That is a nonfiction about the Black Panther Party. And I don't know about you, but I definitely only got one very negative side of the Black Panther Party when I learned about them in school. So I have an arc of this and I've started reading it. It's super immersive, very well researched, very well written. And I think it's really essential reading for a lot of us who also got a similarly negative one-sided view of the Black Panther Party in school. Overall, I think this is a fantastic long list for young people's literature. There are some books I haven't read, but I'm excited to see, 3 nonfiction books. I'm excited to see some graphic fiction. I'm excited to see, Melinda's book on there. So yeah, I was overall very pleased with the young people's list. As far as books that I thought that should have gone on there, I don't know. Because, I read a lot of really good YA this year, but I also feel like what gets picked for the National Book Awards is, a very specific type of book. So I've read really great books, but I know that they wouldn't have necessarily been chosen for this honor just because of the types of books that they are, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this year, I think as far as standout YA, I'm just scrolling through my list of all the books that I've read because I'm trying to figure out
I'm not going to put you on the spot. You don't have to, I'm not going to force you to pick one.
No, I really liked The Marvelous Mirza Girls by Sheba Kareem. I think that was an excellent book, and that's kind of on that same level. And it's the type of book that I think the committee might have picked, but definitely, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it's so hard because what are there, 4 judges, and I'm sure that they are all very distinguished and they are very well read, but at the end of the day, they are only human beings. So, it's just so hard, and there's so many books that come out each year. But I know you have feelings yeah. about books that you also are excited to talk about that maybe didn't get on that list.
Well, it's hard. I don't know who I would vote for now for the, I'm not going to read all the titles for like the award for fiction, but I mean, my hero Elizabeth McCracken is on this list. So, I mean, how could I pick anybody else? But then also like the new Anthony Doerr is on here and the Love Songs, the Honoré Jeffers book, that's the new Oprah pick is on here and the new Lauren Groff. And I'm just like, and you know what else is on here, which actually comes out today, which we did not talk about because neither one of us has read it, is Bewilderment by Richard Powers, which is also on the Booker Prize shortlist. It's like the only crossover on these lists. So like, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to win. Like, look at A Little Life. That was on like every single like award shortlist, and it ended up winning like no awards, you know? Yeah. But if I had to pick a book to put on this list that, you know, that I'm sad that isn't here, I think I would go with The Rib King by Lady Hubbard, because I'm low-key obsessed with that book. Not even low-key. I am obsessed with that book. And I really thought, like, of all the things I read this year, that might be the one that would make it. So I would definitely add that. But yeah, every year I'm glad that I don't have to choose, because I just love everything.
Yes. Yeah, I think one year when Jacqueline Woodson was a judge and she was like, I love you all. This was so much fun. I never want to do this again, because it must be so difficult. And like, I have a friend who was a judge one year, and I remember visiting her in her house. This was obviously pre-COVID, and like just looking at like all of the boxes of books. And she was like, yeah, it's a lot. And like, it's really cool. But yeah, it's a lot. So, I mean, those people who in the judges, that's, you know, hats off to them, because they do an incredible amount of work. And it's so hard to pick books. Like, when there are so many great books. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of great books, those were our new books and our thoughts on the NBA. What are you going to read next?
Oh, well, I have a giant stack of books on my nightstand and, you know, like 18 million books in my house, then all of which are calling out to me, especially since it's like spooky season and I really just want to read spooky books. But I am also in the middle of reading for the very first time The Secret History
by Donna Tartt. I forgot about that.
Which, yes, you and I have talked about this because it's one of your most favorite books.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm reading it for the first time and it's really exciting. And it's one of those books that I'm like not necessarily like picking up every time I sit down to read, because I feel like you need to like plan out some immersive reading time. But yeah, I'm not quite halfway through it, but I'm enjoying it. I'm intrigued by it. I'm trying not to like let all the hype about this book sort of color my opinion about it, but I'm enjoying it. And yeah, I'm probably going to get more in this weekend.
That's good. So I am going to read Four Aunties and a Wedding by Jessie Q Setanto, author of Dial A for Aunties, which is like a huge hit. With book writers and just in general, people are loving that book. So this is the second one. And I'm also reading still the Preston and Child series, which is just, it's just like popcorn for my brain. I'm enjoying those so much. So I'm halfway through Cabinet of Curiosities, which is almost 700 pages long. And I've discovered that mass markets don't quite work for me anymore like they used to. I had to get like a magnifying glass in addition to like my glasses, because it's just so small now. It makes me kind of sad, but I love mass markets because, you know, they cost less than hardcovers, which means you can buy more books to read and you can fit more on your shelves. So I am enjoying them. It's not going to stop me from reading them, but it's so much fun. So I just love books. We all love books. That's why we're here. And that is it for us today. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com if you want to let us know something. You can find us online, Tirza Hangs Out, on Twitter and Instagram at Tirza Price. It's T-I-R-Z-A-H. She has a Z in her name. It's so cool. Price. And I mostly hang out on Instagram at Franzen Comes Alive, which also has a Z in it, but it's not my name, so it's not as cool. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and thank you to everyone who has done that. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.